Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and I'm delighted to have you with us today. We're going to talk today about genetic counseling. What is genetic counseling, and how important it might be to your own health, and how to deal with it if you get a genetic diagnosis. What's the impact of it? I wanted to remind you first that this program is brought to you each week by the VHL, Family Alliance. That stands for von Hippel-Lindau disease, but the show is by no means unique to VHL. It deals with issues of interest to people with any complex medical condition. And we define complex as you're dealing with more than one medical specialist. So that applies to an awful lot of people in the United States. So if you're dealing with more than one medical specialist, then you have a complex medical condition. And the difference is that that's going to require from you a lot of coordination of your medical care, because it doesn't happen automatically, especially not in the United States. So we're going to talk about issues of interest to people with complex conditions or disabilities of various descriptions. So stick with us and use whatever condition we're talking about as a model for this kind of thing apply to you, even if the bits and bytes, the little particulars, aren't exactly the same as what you're coping with. And we hope that you'll find some good stuff in what we talk about. So let me play you a little bit of information first about VHL so you get the framework of what I do every day. And I work with people with von Hippel-Lindau disease in 106 countries, believe it or not, all over the world, thanks to the Internet. And we're in touch with about 16,000 people in 106 countries all over the world, many language groups. And I'll tell you more later about the multilingual support that we're able to provide. So, here's a little bit about VHL, and we'll be right back.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
Hi, welcome back. And at this point, I'd like to introduce our guest today. We have Mary Frances Barber with us. Hi, Mary Frances. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Thank you for inviting me today.
Great. So it's wonderful to have you with us. So you're a genetic counselor. Would you tell us a little bit about what is a genetic counselor?
Well, a genetic counselor is a professional who is trained in both the science of genetics and psychology, so that we can provide patients and their families with information regarding a genetic diagnosis and then deal with their emotional response that follows.
So what kind of training does a genetic counselor get?
You have to go to graduate training at an accredited program. There are 32 programs in the United States and Canada that offer a Master's of Science in Human Genetics or Genetic Counseling, and this involves classroom work as well as hands-on work in medical centers or commercial laboratories dealing with various types of genetic issues. Genetic counselors are also board certified by the American Board of Genetic Counselors. And in 6 states, including Massachusetts, we are now licensed providers.
So I understand that it's slightly different. The licensing is slightly different in different countries. So sometimes it's a nurse, a genetics practitioner, or something like that. Do you know about those?
Well, what I'm describing right now is more of the traditional genetic counselor, somebody, a master's level provider who may have been a nurse initially or a social worker initially, but this is somebody who has a master of science in genetic counseling and has been board certified by the American Board of Genetic Counselor and then is licensed by their state. So in Massachusetts, we just passed licensure in April of 2009. And we are licensed by the Department of Public Health and need to keep current with continuing education and so forth.
Okay. So the reason I brought it up is when I was in Japan, genetic counselors are brand new in Japan. They haven't had a genetics counseling program.
Yeah.
And they started by giving specialized training to a certain subset of nurses. But they were beginning to train people as master's degree genetic counselors, as you just described. So it's relatively new, but it is building all over the world because of heightened awareness of the importance of understanding genetics. And you have to understand that most doctors went to medical school before there were much in the way of courses in genetics. So they don't always understand it very well and can't always explain it very well to a patient.
Mm-hmm.
My own experience with it is when people are counseled by a genetic counselor, they're much more likely to understand what's happening than if they're counseled by a physician. We often have neurosurgeons or kidney specialists order up a DNA test as if it were a blood test.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then deliver the news themselves, and that can really leave people quite confused.
Yes, no, I agree with that, and I think what you said is a compliment to the profession of genetic counseling in that, you know, we specialize in this, on how to communicate the factual information, and then to make sure people are okay or understanding or adjusting to what we've just told them. And I think there is a difference between somebody in genetics with a master of science with that combination of medical and psych background versus somebody who's an MD who may not necessarily have the time before seeing the next patient to
right.
Explain it in that way. And I
right.
think before
so many doctors are under. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And the other thing I was going to say, Joyce, is that I think that before anybody orders a DNA or genetic or carrier test on anybody, truly you have to do a service and educate that patient who's giving their blood or their skin biopsy or their tumor biopsy and educate them as to what this could mean for them as well as for their family and make sure there's an understanding. Don't wait till the test comes back and then backtrack and have to educate them then.
Right, absolutely. And you mentioned before about time constraints. The doctors are often under time constraints. The HMOs in particular are trying to get them to spend no more than about 12 minutes per patient,
yeah.
Whereas your average genetic counseling session goes more like 45 minutes to an hour, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So just spending the time, doing a little hand-holding, and when people get news that's difficult to absorb, it often takes telling it more than once. So, and you may not accomplish all of that conveyance of the information even in one session. It may need to be reinforced. I know with our hotline, we often get people who have been to a counseling session and gotten good information, but they still don't quite have it, or there's part of it that they're resisting.
Yes. Yes. Yep, there's like a digestion process, really, to the diagnosis or to the information, and that might mean for the genetic counselor to have to reiterate that information more than one time, as you're alluding to, and using a mechanism of like teach back, asking the patient, "What did you hear me tell you just then?" Following up by phone, bringing them in a second time, and maybe they need help explaining this information to other family members as well.
That's right. And I think it's so new that a lot of us don't even understand why we're being tested for something genetic. Because so many of the diseases that we've always thought were just, diseases, you catch it or you don't catch it, are now being understood to be, at least in part, genetically promoted.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Genetics is becoming a public health issue, and a lot of genetic counselors are involved in education of genetics into public health programs in various states, as well as, like you say, the common diseases. A lot of them are having a genetic component. Family health history is something that we talk a lot about in clinics and in the community now, for people to know their family health history, because common ailments, diabetes, cancer, cardiovascular, there's a genetic component that we're all learning about, and it is new, like you said.
Sometimes in families, especially the older folks in the family, will say things like, "What do you mean it's genetic? There's no such thing in our family." How do you respond to stuff like that? I know my husband's grandmother was highly offended that we thought that the disease that my husband and his father both had was genetic.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a little bit of disbelief there, and I think there's a component of guilt there too. And for the older generations, I think it's hard to come to terms with that. And, before you say anything, you really want to validate what somebody is feeling. And so you would say to that older person, "Well, of course it's normal to feel that, this didn't come down the family tree from you or from your generation. But what we're learning now is that a lot of these things are inherited, and that each of us has 3 to 4 non-working genes in our system that sometimes go silently through our family tree and sometimes become obvious or penetrant, as we say.
Right, and the words guilt and blame tend to come up a lot. And we really need to try to weed those out, because genetics is not anything that we have control over.
Right.
We certainly didn't do it intentionally.
Yeah.
It was not done to us as a punishment. It's just the roll of the dice. You got it the same way you got your blue eyes or your pointed nose or whatever.
That's exactly right. And I think using an example like that of a trait, eye color, hair color, is a perfect example. I think it's easy to say, let's take the guilt and blame out. But for some reason, when you encounter a family and it's something that has passed down from father to child or mother to child, that guilt component does come up. And I think it's the responsibility of genetic counselors to deal with that and help people come to terms with the understanding that it's a random act.
Right, right. I know when my son was diagnosed with the disease that his father and his grandfather both had, I felt a certain guilt about it, because I knew, just as his father did, that we had a 50-50 chance of passing it to our child. And we still decided to, flip that coin once and see what kind of a wonderful kid we could make, because we had that one gene we wish we couldn't passed to him, but we had a lot of other really good ones. And, oh, well, we really, really want this baby, so we went for it. But, unfortunately, he wound up with the one gene we wish we hadn't passed to him.
Yeah.
But, again, it's not anything we could have controlled. If I could have swapped mine for his, I would have done it in a flash. But I decided, it wasn't doing either one of us any good if I felt guilty about it. I needed to take that energy and turn it into something positive.
That's an absolutely good way to handle that.
Yeah. What else would you say to a family that's thrashing about, oh, don't tell me I gave this to my kid?
Yeah, I think, you know, validating what they're feeling and explaining, like you said, there are many good genes that we want to pass on, and that there are some that we know that we want to avoid, and some that we have that we don't even know that we want to avoid, because we carry genes silently, and the ones
right.
that are affected you might not know you're passing on. But, you know, with the bad comes the good, and I think, you know, our genes are located on chromosomes. They're packaged together on these larger units. And so while you might pass on that VHL gene to your offspring, along with those come these other genes that might have very good outcomes for that child as well.
One of the doctors said, you know, I really think that people with VHL are very handsome people and very bright. We went, okay, we'll take that. You know, and I don't know that that's universally true, but as you say, there's
exactly.
an upside to,
yeah.
to each of us as individuals, and we need to appreciate the positive in each person. And the one thing we can control in our children is we need to give them love and a solid self-image and the ability to manage their own health.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I think those are the most important ingredients for anybody.
I agree with that.
So you have a private practice in genetics. You don't work with a hospital. Tell us what you do in your private practice.
Yes. I'll start out by saying that I did work at Brigham and Women's Hospital for 11 and a half years in high-risk obstetrics. I'm currently also the executive director of the New England Regional Genetics Group. I keep everybody in New England who works with genetics in touch with each other. I plan educational conferences. I report to the board of directors. It's an administrative role, and I really missed working with patients. So I opened a private practice. I call it Listening, Reflecting, Healing. And it primarily is set up to help patients deal with their emotional responses, whether it be to a poor obstetrical or pediatric outcome or a loss that they might be experiencing. So I sort of see it as a continuation of care, that what is started maybe in the medical centers or in the hospitals that I finish in the community setting. People might have to come to see me just once. Some people might need multiple visits. But it's really to normalize the feelings that patients are feeling or spouses are feeling or parents are feeling and helping them deal with whether they have grief or anxiety or just, you know, feeling a little out of control.
So tell us some of the people that might come to your practice. At what point would someone decide that they might need to talk to you?
Yes. I see patients who are pregnant. They might be struggling with a diagnosis they've been given in a pregnancy. Maybe their baby is going to have a heart defect or a chromosome problem. And they've been told this, and now they have to process that information and decide how they're going to manage that. I can help them with that. People who have had a miscarriage, a stillborn baby, multiple neonatal losses, they might want to come and talk with me. Families who have new or established genetic diagnoses, things that might present in infancy, childhood, or even adulthood. People might want additional information or support and again, come to see me to talk this over. I even provide supportive counseling to families who are searching for a diagnosis. Maybe somebody has a child who is presenting with one or two problems, and the doctors bring them in every few months and look at the child and try to evaluate what's wrong with him or her. And that is very anxiety provoking for the parent, and they might
right.
need to come in to talk about that. And lastly, I like to facilitate support groups for various indications, pregnancy loss, new diagnoses, I run a San Filippo Mothers support group as well. And I do this all in a setting here in an office in Needham with flexible hours, you know, whether it be daytime or evening or even on weekends sometimes. But really just I feel that not only do I want to provide information, but I want to help people deal with what they've been told and validate their feelings and simply listen to them.
Right. So part of it is diagnosis and part of it is coping mechanisms once you do have a diagnosis. And a couple things that might lead you to you or to someone like you. You mentioned pregnancy. There's a lot of genetic testing that goes on in pregnancy now because we understand that so many birth defects may be caused by genetic flaws that you didn't even know you had or that occurred at or after conception of this particular child. So it may not even be inherited. It may just be Mother Nature made a mistake in copying one of those genes. And there's so many millions of genes that have to be faithfully copied when we make a baby. Sometimes I think it's pretty amazing that there are any healthy babies.
Exactly. And I think it's a process. I think people need to understand that hearing the diagnosis is just the beginning, and coming to terms with it and living it with it is a process. But having worked with many families through the years, I do know that everyone adjusts and heals and moves forward in some capacity. And sometimes just hearing that from a professional is what people need. As well as resources, putting people in touch with peers for support, written resources, a good website, those are the things I can help people with as well.
And another thing that might take you to a genetics professional would be if you notice something in the family that it seems to repeat, gee, there's a lot of kidney cancer in our family, or there's a lot of breast cancer in our family. And so that sort of cancer risk genetics is becoming a very hot field as well, trying to understand if there's some trait that may be promoting a particular kind of illness or cancer in your family, and then learning how to manage it, because there are ways to manage it if you know what you're dealing with.
Yes, exactly. And one thing you're alluding to would be like pre-symptomatic testing or counseling, taking the family history with the patient, going over that with them, seeing if there's any kinds of testing you could offer, and explaining to them if they tested positive for the gene that we're looking for, is there a treatment? Is there preventative medicine? Is there careful planning, as with breast cancer, the mammograms and prophylactic mastectomy, things that can be done to help lower that ultimate chance of developing disease?
Right. If we think of the people, we sometimes see these things in the press, even if we don't see them amongst our friends. An 18-year-old who drops dead on the basketball court, or a 35-year-old business person who drops dead of a heart attack. If you know somebody under 50 who had that kind of sudden dramatic event, chances are there's some genetic promoter at work that you didn't know about. And if you had known about it, maybe he wouldn't have become a professional athlete. He probably could have lived a long and happy life if he just hadn't pushed himself beyond the pale of his capabilities. It's understanding what your limitations are and living with those limitations can literally extend your life, right?
Right, exactly. And monitoring, really. You know, the basketball player example that you're speaking about, you know, there are certain signs and symptoms that geneticists can look for in individuals, and if you see them, there could be monitoring of different organs or blood tests or things like that that can help ascertain a diagnosis.
Right. The other thing that might take you there is if you notice in yourself that you have a collection of odd things happening. I know I talked to a woman not too long ago who said, I've been diagnosed just in the last 2 years with a rare adrenal cancer and a rare thyroid cancer. I said, Has anybody ever checked you for multiple endocrine neoplasias?
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes these things might belong to a syndrome. So there might be just one bitty little genetic misspelling in one gene that's actually increasing your risk of certain kinds of things. And it's a collection. It's a syndrome of things. And if you understand it, understand how it operates, there are ways to protect yourself and find things early and deal with them appropriately and have a happy life.
Exactly. Distinguishing between the label of a genetic syndrome, which is a collection of conditions or anomalies or signs and symptoms, and understanding that that syndrome or that diagnosis is really the factor. Then you look at the underlying cause of the syndrome, which is what you're talking about, the genetic mutation that causes that, along with all the things that go with it.
And I think what we're coming into, too, is a sort of an era of protection in the workplace, where workplaces may require you to test for certain things. I know there was a brouhaha recently about a high school that wanted to test all the star athletes for sickle cell. And maybe you can tell us why that would be a good idea, even though that people were afraid that this was stigmatizing, that it was going to say this child is different from another child. But it really is a way of trying to make sure that there are no tragedies on the basketball court.
Well, I don't know why a school would want to test everybody for sickle cell trait if we're talking about them carrying trait. We went through that in the 60s, and that was not a good place to be in terms of, you said there was discrimination and there was stigma and things like that. And I don't know that really a high school should be the place to say, let's test for this. Again, before we test for anything, I think there needs to be education, consent, both on the parent and the child's part, understanding what this is going to mean. And I think a genetic counselor can help in that situation. I think mass screening like that is not, you know, not really something that is very acceptable today in 2011.
Right. I agree with you in terms of the process. But on the other hand, if they required that you have a physical with your own doctor that included genetic testing for a couple of the things that are known to potentially weaken the heart and make that kind of a tragedy a very distinct possibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Would that make sense to you?
You know, I think each case would be situational and unique. I haven't heard of something like that being done. I didn't hear about
that.
Well,
the reason I'm bringing it up is that, for example, in industry, there are certain chemicals that people work with that can be more harmful to people who have certain genetic problems mm-hmm. than to others. So, I mean, asthma kinds of things is something that's more obvious.
Yeah.
But if you have a particular weakness, then maybe you shouldn't work next to that chemical, and maybe they should be required to find you a position in another part of the company.
Right, and that's
so we're
totally
going to come to the.
Yeah, that's totally understandable.
We're coming soon to the end of the show, so I wanted to be sure to get your website out there again, so if people do want to follow up with you, that they can do so.
That is great, Joyce. Thank you so much for that. My website is simply www.listeningreflectinghealing. That's listeningreflectinghealing.com. And the information is there on the types of patients that I'm willing to help. And if there's ever a question, if you fit into that category or situation, just send an email. My email is there. My phone number is there. And I'm willing to work with people just to help people to adjust and to move forward with their lives.
Thank you so much. That's Mary Frances Garber of ListeningReflectingLearning.com. And thanks so much for being with us today. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back again next week with another show, and we hope that you'll join us. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Joyce.